And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. That's right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, the text lines are open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. If you want to text in your feedback, your thoughts, your opinions, you're welcome to it. That's also the same number you call in on. So 833-68-RIGHT. That's the number. John from Huntsville's already commenting on the fact that last night was a major stormy night. Yes, it was. Northeast Alabama, period. Had some thunder bumpers coming in around 10:45-ish and covered that. We needed that rain, though, man. Anyway, glad you're well, John, since his power finally came back on. I hate the fact that you were out of it for a while. All right, so apparently Cheryl from Madison Butters, have you ever seen that text?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Cheryl from Madison.
So I'm a VAQ-142 guy. I'm sure you're curious.
I don't understand. So VAQ stands for what? You're a Navy guy. I'm an Army guy. What does that even mean to me?
Navy squadrons, real quick. V, fixed wing, and the Q is electronic warfare. The A is attack. So it's fixed wing electronic attack squadron. VFA would be an F-18 squadron. That would be a fixed wing fighter attack squadron. So VAQ was the name of our squadron.
Why did you just say that in the first place?
Because it's VAQ-142.
Cool. Anyway, all right. Well, yeah, Cheryl from Madison, glad you're in and appreciate you and your husband's service. So, yeah, he was a Prowler pilot. So, very cool. Did y'all know each other by the show? You don't know for a fact what her name is.
If you text the call sign, I might recognize it.
Yeah.
There's a pretty decent chance it's a small community.
Yeah, Cheryl, text in the call sign. But you are talking to Butters, and that was the call sign for the guy sitting here on the board with us today. Samah, the truck driver. He says, you're a Christian first, a conservative second, then a Republican. I agree. Samah, thank you very much. You are absolutely correct, sir. Brian from Huntsville, with regards to my monologue, says, Gasoline Alley. Yep. Morgan County versus Madison County and Huntsville back then. It was, man. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, me driving my 68 Mustang around South Huntsville, delivering pizza for Domino's, I'd be like, I'll be back in 20 minutes because it was cheaper for me to go across the river and save the extra, you know, 57 cents on gas. But, you know, back then, I can remember scraping change out of my ashtray because I didn't smoke, so the ashtray was for change. So I'd scrape the change out of my ashtray, and I could get gas with, like, the 78 cents that I pulled out of my ashtray. Nowadays, good luck. But anyway, glad to see somebody else remembers Gasoline Alley. Thank you very much. And then Tyler from Huntsville, wherever you are, there we is. I hadn't said that in a while. I used to say that all the time. Yes, yeah, that's right. Well,
such truth.
It's deep when you think about it. But hey, we were talking a minute ago. So Boomer is actually on vacation, but he just texted in, and he was loving the story about the Skittles my little guy had when he was.
Yeah.
So your kids are, you got teenagers, right?
Yep.
Woo, blessings on you.
Yes.
But I imagine y'all had the
teenage girls. So,
oh,
yeah,
time to get back in the Prowler.
Yes, yes, lots of guns.
But you probably had a few Easter egg hunts in your day.
Yeah, a few.
So, one of my favorite stories, I'll tell this one real quick. My son, of course, we recognized in the Skittles story that he already had, you know, fiscal conservative predilections. You know, he was deferring gratification at 3 years old. But I'll never forget, around the same time frame, he goes to, like, little daycare, and they have the Easter hunt, right? And my little man, competitive as he can be, he's like breaking a sweat, brother. He's like, it's time to collect eggs. He is scooping them up. Other kids are walking around picking daisies, you know, and scratching their heads trying to figure out what to do. Josh is already filling his basket. I'm talking about when he got done, I was one proud dad.
Nice.
Because they're like falling out. He's having to hold it with both arms to keep them from falling out of the basket. And the teachers go, okay, everybody set your baskets right down here, and we'll all go inside for a party. And he comes back out. And some well-meaning teacher had decided that everyone needed to have an equal share.
Some socialist.
At least. So, yeah. So my son, he says that he came back out and saw that all of his eggs had been redistributed so that all the basket looked about the same. In his own words, he goes, at that moment, a conservative was born. But that's, you know, whatever. I'm just, good Lord. And then, yeah, Boomer's texting in right there. He goes, smart little man wanting to save the Skittles. You never know when you might need those Skittles. Love that story. Boomer, you guys have an amazing time with family. Tell everybody there we love them. And we'll see you back here shortly. In the meantime, Butters has got the board, and so far all the buttons are getting pushed on time. All right, folks, time for a break. We'll take this break. We'll come right back. Number one, Triple Dipper, Election Machinations. We'll be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That will be this one. That will be Alabama. I'm talking about this show sends its signal way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, we got some breaking news here. Just saw this. Jeff Poor from 1819 News has texted it to me. Dang, if this story didn't just go up like in the last few minutes. But the Alabama Department of Transportation, ALDOT, we've talked about them several times of late. ALDOT Director John Cooper was arrested in Marshall County for harassment. What? I mean, this is a cabinet-level official. This is a state cabinet-level official. And, you know, it's still kind of up in the air as to what exactly happened. It appears he's been charged with a misdemeanor charge of harassment and intimidation that may have been something to do with a boundary line dispute with a neighbor, a property line dispute, because I believe he is from Marshall County. That's where the arrest took place. But, yeah, Marshall County Sheriff's Office confirmed the arrest of John Cooper, director of ALDOT. He is 75 years old. By the way, my understanding is he's also got some health issues that could be, you know, exacerbating his tensions. But most recently, we've been dealing with the whole thing about that lawsuit down in South Alabama over the building of a bridge and whether or not he was, you know, outside the boundaries of what he should be doing by authorizing construction on a bridge. Anyway, apparently 1819 News reached out to Governor Kay Ivey's office for a reaction about one of her cabinet officials being arrested for a misdemeanor charge, and there's been no response as yet. I'll let you know if I see one later. Wow, that's just crazy. Text lines are open. I got stuff going on. Linda from Madison says it's working out good so far. Butters, all good. John from Huntsville. So, hey, Butters, you ought to talk Phil into letting you have your own segment. You can call it the Butter Believe It.
Nice. Nice. Far more creative than me.
That's the Butter Believe It. You Butter Believe It. All right. Anyway, Mark from Red Bay says, we have somewhat of a gasoline alley over. Go over to Mississippi. Gas is on the average 25 cents a gallon. 25 cents. Good Lord. I might drive from here to Mississippi to get gas if that's the case.
Going back and forth when I was stationed down in Texas, we'd always stop in Madison. Madison, and some of the cheapest gas in the country.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I used to drive like back and forth, you know, going up to Knoxville. You cross through the northwest corner of Georgia, little town there called Rising Fawn. By the way, Rising Fawn, Georgia, is apparently, legend have it, where kids from northeast Alabama used to go to elope back in the day because you didn't have to have, you know, signatures from parents and all that. Anyway, all that to say, you could also buy gas cheaper there for the longest time. Not anymore, though.
And correction, Meridian. Sorry.
Meridian.
I had Huntsville on my mind. Meridian, Mississippi.
Yes, that makes more sense to me. JT from Lacey Springs is giving you parenting advice about raising teenage daughters.
I'll take all I can get.
All right. Hey, listen, let's jump in. Number one of the triple dipper, election machinations. So depends on who you talk to about whether we need something done about election integrity laws around the nation. I mean, it's really kind of nutty. First of all, I guess I got to ask the question. So just ask a liberal next time they're fussing over voter ID and say, is it your goal to let illegals vote? Is that what you want to do? Just, if you do, just say so. And then the next question, when they go, it disenfranchises minorities, then go ahead and ask them, well, are you willing to say then that black people don't know how to get a photo ID? Right. Is that what you're saying? Well, it's disproportionately unfair. How is that true? By the way, we disproved all of that in Alabama. Thank you very much. When I was in the legislature, we passed voter ID back in 2014, somewhere thereabouts. And then former Secretary of State John Merrill made it a mission in life. He said he would even come to your house if you needed a voter ID. And so they had mobile stations set up. They put out the word. They got and they had more people registered to vote than ever before. At the same time, they literally had some of the highest voter turnout ever. And apparently voter ID didn't disenfranchise anybody. I mean, it's kind of nutty when you consider some of the arguments. Well, so look at this story I got here from the New York Times. Headline, by the way, this came out May the 8th, so we're looking at right out a month ago. Under the radar, the right-wing push to tighten voter laws persists. Why is it just right-wing? I mean, do Democrats, do they not want to know that elections are fair and even and legal? I think you know the answer to that. Headline, New York Times, under the radar, right-wing push to tighten voting laws persists. The first recent wave of legislation tightening voter laws came in 2021, they point out, when Donald J. Trump's false claims of voter fraud spurred Republican lawmakers to act out over loud objections from Democrats. And then they point out that there have been a number of states beginning to pass laws. You know why? Because they cheated. That's why. Let me just point out something. I don't care whether you think that there was widespread systemic cheating going on. The fact is, it was irregular no matter how you look at it. I don't give a rat's hind end who you are. You cannot look at the 2020 election and go, ah, that was normal. I mean, between COVID protocols and the U.S. Constitution mandating that only the state legislature can change or amend voting laws, and yet they were being changed daily by everybody from the mayors and city councils to the governors, secretaries of state, election officials that weren't even elected. You had things happening in Pennsylvania that were just beyond the pale. Georgia was whacked. Arizona still hadn't recovered. I mean, if Florida can get its ballots counted in one night, and yet it takes Arizona 3 weeks, there is something broken. Don't try and tell me that was normal, because it wasn't. I was growing up. I mean, I remember starting, you know, my voting processes when I was 18 years old, cast my very first ballot for Ronald Reagan. And I do not remember there ever being any delay on figuring out who won the election. Usually you knew before you went to bed that night. Not anymore. So don't tell me it's normal. But the article goes on to say, propelled by a new coalition of Trump allies, Republican-led legislatures have continued to pass significant restrictions on access to the ballot. Restrictions. Why is it a restriction to ask someone to prove that they are who they are? I mean, you say you're Butters. You got a card that says you're Butters? I want to see it, you know, with your mug on it. I want to see it. Just saying.
Not that hard.
Yeah, it's not that hard. And, you know, the idea that grown people are not capable enough to go down to the courthouse to get an ID, or go to one of the mobile ID sites that are set up for them, or to have someone pick them up and take them down there in the year between elections is absolutely insulting. But they go on to talk about the fact that there's a network of billionaire-backed advocacy groups. Like George Soros doesn't ever help the left, right? Okay. Shifting instead to a strategy that one leader calls as radical incrementalism, they've been slowly making changes. They haven't stopped trying to change how our elections run. They're just doing it outside the spotlight, said one partisan hack. 18 bills thus far in 10 states have been signed into law that will add new restrictions to voting. By the way, restrictions, restrictions, restrictions. It's not a restriction if all you're doing is clarifying. If all you're doing is saying, yeah, you know, the law says that only people who are citizens of our state who live in a certain district can actually vote. So all we're doing is saying, please prove that you are a citizen of our state in the district allowed to vote. That's all we're saying. Why is that bad? Well, you made it harder to get an absentee ballot. No, we made it harder for somebody else to forge your absentee ballot. How about that? If you're going to go out of town, if you're going to be on business, if you're sick, if you're an invalid, and you recognize that you still want to exercise your constitutional right to vote, by God, we want you to. All we're saying is, how about you not put a whole group of seniors on a bus, hand them their ballots, tell them how to vote, and then pick them up and bring them in like 50 or 60 at a time. That just smacks of voter fraud. All right, that being said, even Roll Call comes out and talks about how Republican states are highlighting tightened voter laws, especially with added voter identification requirements. This story came out in March of this year. Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Ohio, as models to increase election integrity, are drawing a fight with Democrats over what constitutes a successful election. You know what? What constitutes a successful election, if you're looking at it in terms of pure victory, it depends on who you're talking to. But in terms of being successful, the election officers of the state and the counties and the cities, their goal is just to make sure it's free, fair, even, and accurately counted. That's what matters. Well, this piece goes on to say, even Representative Terry Sewell, Democrat of Alabama, who is the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Elections, noted a series of legal attacks on the Voting Rights Act of 1965, a seminal piece of civil rights. Basically, what she's saying was, well, don't stop. We got to have more race built in, whereas we've been told all along, stop having race built in, which is going to lead us to the next piece here in just a minute. But then you get down to what didn't happen this year in Alabama, and I have to question why. So we had a bill in the Alabama legislature this session, House Bill 209 by State Representative Jamie Keel out of Russellville. And State Rep Keel had House Bill 209 all the way through the processes of legislating in the House, upstairs to the Senate, came out of committee in the Senate, never got a chance to go to the floor for a vote. What did it do? It prevented ballot harvesting in Alabama. It said that in Alabama, there could be criminal penalties assigned if you are caught ballot harvesting, which is basically defined as helping gather up ballots illegally with the intent to sort of pack the ballot box. Well, those who are against it, like, for instance, Senate Minority Leader Bobby Singleton. I know Bobby. He's a good dude, but he's a partisan Democrat. He was a vocal opponent of the bill, came out on Alabama Public Television last week saying, I thought it was a bad bill. He says, first of all, we don't have a problem. Let me make sure you're clear. All right, when we go down to the legislature, if we wait to pass bills after the problem has arisen every single time, then all we're doing is reactionary legislating. Sometimes you look out there and you say, whoo, look at what's coming. Look at how much fentanyl is killing people in California. Let's increase the penalties in Alabama. Look at how much is happening with fiscal issues over here. Let's align our budget processes accordingly in Alabama. Or for that matter, you've got, I don't know, maybe ballot harvesting going up And you look at it and go, why would we wait? Why would we wait? Well, Bobby Singleton thinks we don't have a problem. Okay. He says, they're getting ahead of the game. Yes, that's called wisdom. He says, you're going to give a person a felony for being able to go out and assist someone with the application, not the ballot, with the sworn. basically he's overplaying it, because the real deal is what was written in 1819 News by Jeff Poor. State Rep. Keel called it disingenuous for the media to falsely portray this as being anything more than just preventing the cheating of the ballot. It's not hard to figure out. But I will point this out. Bobby Singleton is a Democrat. He can't do a thing to stop a bill if the supermajority of Republicans want it to move. He can't. He can bluster. He can even filibuster for a while. But he couldn't stop the bill. It was Republicans that stopped that bill from passing. It was Republicans that said, you know, let's just not bring that to the floor for a vote. Why would they do that? When we get back from this break, I'll go ahead and tell you why I think they didn't do that. I think there's a plan right now for Republicans to start ballot harvesting just like Democrats. That's why. And they wanted the option to remain on the table. Kind of bugs me. We'll talk about it when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, where common sense is a superpower. So I got a caller on the line that I'll go to in just 1 minute. Let me say this real quick. I was talking right before the break about the fact that Republicans chose not to try and pass a ballot harvesting bill in Alabama in the most recent session. And they had the opportunity. They could have brought it up on the last day. It was good to go. Now, we're told that in some reporting, we're told that Republicans just didn't want to do anything controversial on the last day, which is just, I got to be honest with you, it's just so tiresome to hear that. You might have gotten hard. We might have been here longer. It might have been more difficult. It might have been rowdy. You got a supermajority. How hard could it be if you want to do it? That being said, they chose not to pass a ballot harvesting bill that was poised and ready for final vote. And for what, and it was being pushed by the Secretary of State, Wes Allen. Here's a piece that may explain why. Townhall.com, dated June 7th, 5 days ago. At the same time they're not passing that bill in the legislature, the same day, the Republican National Committee says that it has decided that it will be using the same ballot harvesting laws already allowed in some states to beat the Democrats at their own game. That's what Ronna McDaniel is saying. She says, the fact of the matter is we no longer have election day. We have election seasons. With many states opening their polls for weeks, Republicans saw success in 2022 with absentee voting. And so now as we work to flip the House, Senate, protect the House, and win back the White House in 2024, we're doubling down and making our plan called Bank Your Vote our number one priority, and that they plan to use ballot harvesting. So what I'm hearing is that basically the state party, the national party, is like, hey, let's don't do away with that. Let's just do it ourselves. And I got some real mixed feelings about that. I mean, I guess if Democrats are doing it and it's not illegal, then we don't let them get away with it. But secondly, I would say this. How about we stop everybody from doing it? Let's go back to having one single freaking day when you cast your vote and that night you get the results. And you don't have weeks of ballot harvesting, weeks of stuffing the boxes, weeks of, you know, all kinds of strange, you know, machinations going on, followed by weeks of counting the votes. It's unreal. Let me jump over to the phones real quick. Is that Jeff from Indiana? Yeah, it is. Hey, Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, Phil.
Good. What's on your mind,
hey,
man?
Yeah. How come the Alabama legislature didn't change the voting regulations in Pennsylvania? They have every bit as much power to do that as what the people did it last time in Pennsylvania.
yeah, because all the wrong people did it last time.
Yeah, and I'm halfway serious. I mean, if that's the case, you know, if people who don't have the legality to change voting laws, change the voting laws, who got thrown in jail for that, I wonder?
Ain't
Is
nobody.
That illegal?
Nah, ain't nobody got thrown in jail. None yet.
Imagine that. Yeah. Well, if there's no penalty for it, I guess you can just go ahead and change it then, can't you?
So what you're saying is Alabama needs to pass all the necessary laws for each of the states to get fixed.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, why not? I mean, other people did it, and they didn't have the power to do so, but they listened to them for some reason.
Can we go ahead and change the tax laws in California while we're at it?
Well, yeah. Charge anybody who goes to California a stupid tax, I guess.
Point taken, man. Yeah, you're right. And it's like, you know, the whole thing about how Trump's allegations were proven false. No, it was really, there was an asterisk by everything that happened that year. Don't tell me it was normal. But, hey, listen, man, we're up against the break. You have a safe drive on the road, right?
Yep. Thank you, Phil.
All right. See you, buddy. You too. Yeah, he's right. I mean, if all the people who aren't allowed to do it did it anyway, why don't we just do it for them this time? It's funny. I don't know. You look at it and go, man, ain't nothing about the 2020s that was accurate. Nothing, nothing, nothing. All right, coming up in the next half hour, right after the break, we're going to have Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. We're going to keep this election machinations discussion going, get his thoughts on the fact that the Supreme Court just said that we have to redraw our congressional lines. But is the case over? Because the Attorney General says we ain't done. We'll talk about it with Matt Clark. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, hey, listen, we're still in number one of the triple dipper. I'm calling it election machinations. Like, for instance, you've got the New York Times claiming that all this stuff about election integrity is just a perpetuation of the big lie. Because everything went perfectly in 2020. And there should never be any need for tightening up the way we do things. And then you got multiple states that are out there actually making changes, requiring voter ID for the first time, looking at how best to prevent ballot harvesting. And then you had Alabama just not get around to voting on ballot harvesting. Why? Because maybe the Republican Party actually wants to just, you know, sort of play that game too. Which I got to say, I just assume we all start getting on an even keel and get back to clean and clear and accurate and timely elections, period. Election season, that's crap. Election day, that's what we're supposed to have. All right, but listen, there's more going on because elections next year could involve some new congressional lines. Right now we have 7 congressional districts in the state of Alabama. One of those has always been traditionally a Democrat district, Representative Terry Sewell. But the Supreme Court of the United States kind of threw us a curveball last week. And coming on right now is my friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, always one to provide great commentary when it comes to constitutional and Supreme Court issues. So without further ado, Matt Clark, how you doing today, man?
Hey, Phil, I am doing better than I deserve, so I can't complain. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks much. Appreciate you making time for us. If I'm not mistaken, didn't ACLL, the Center for Law and Liberty, actually file an amicus brief in that case before the Supreme Court?
Yeah, we did. We actually filed two. So, you know, you remember, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do, the state of Alabama sought emergency relief from the Supreme Court, asking them to step in and put the district court's order on hold. We did an amicus brief at that stage. There were a lot of great conservative lawyers that showed up. Burt Jordan from Wallace Jordan, I think very highly of him. He jumped in, did a brief. You know, I did a brief. There were a few others. And the Supreme Court stated. That's why our elections could go forward. And then we filed one at the merit stage, and unfortunately that's where Justice Kavanaugh flipped, joined the liberals, and it came out the other way. So we were disappointed, but yeah, we were there for both stages of the battle.
Did Kavanaugh ever offer a written opinion as to what swayed him to join the liberal side of the decision?
Yeah, he did, and it just it puzzles me and it frustrates me. So Kavanaugh said what it really came down to him was the doctrine of stare decisis. As you know very well, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, stare decisis is a doctrine that once the Supreme Court or a court generally has made a decision, it sticks with it unless you can persuade them that that precedent ought to be overruled, and that's generally pretty hard to do. So for Kavanaugh, he said, all right, look, a lot of the state's arguments here is that you ought to be taking race out of the equation, that's essentially what it was. But he says, we got about 40 years of precedent in the way of saying, no, you have to consider it. It has to be one of your chief considerations. And so regardless of whether I think it's right or wrong, we've been doing it this way for 40 years, and that's what I'm going to go with. And to me, so this was like the central part of our amicus brief. I have to say, I think if you go with the governing precedent, it makes our case kind of tough. But the governing precedents are garbage, all right? And so that's what we argued. We endorsed Justice Thomas's position, saying, look, this doesn't comply with the Voting Rights Act itself, and it certainly doesn't comply with the Constitution. So you ought to throw it out and go with what the Constitution of the United States and the statutory law that Congress passed actually said. And I think Kavanaugh might actually be open to that if you press that case really, really hard. So if this case goes back to the Supreme Court, there's a chance we could flip him back. But we've got to hit the issue right between the eyes and pull no punches in how we do it.
Well, all right. So you bring up a great point, and this is effectively going to require us to see the state congressional district lines redrawn before next year's election. That being said, the decision from the Supreme Court, it was not a decision based upon the merits of the underlying case. It dealt with the injunction that was put in place. So are we done? Because Attorney General Steve Marshall says we're not done. What are your thoughts?
No, we're not done. And I'm really grateful that AG Marshall has decided to fight on. I think he's one of the better Republican attorneys general, and I think his actions here are showing it. So as you pointed out, Phil, this was not a final decision. A lot of the times when cases go up on appeal, as you know very well, you have to have a final decision from the lower courts that sets it up for the appellate court to consider it cleanly. But in this case, the district court had just issued an injunction, and that's what got judged at the Supreme Court. So, to kind of put this in football terms, you got to think about it. Like, we're at halftime right now, and, the ACLU is up at halftime, but there's still another half of ball to play. And so what the Supreme Court kind of did in this case is they decided who was ahead at halftime. But we're not done yet. If the Attorney General's office can win the battle of the experts at trial, if you can show that, look, there's really no way that you can redraw these maps in the way that you're suggesting and still comply with the law, then we can still win this. And I think that's what they're going to be shooting for, and I wish them the best of luck.
All right, so are they going to expedite that lower court, that trial on the merits? I mean, because right now we've got to technically begin redrawing lines like immediately and have them in place by November for qualifying for next year's race.
Yeah, I mean, the official answer is I haven't seen anything about expediting it, but practically I don't see how they can do anything other than expedite it, because you're right. I mean, candidates are going to start having to qualify very, very soon, and, it would be terrible for them if they qualify just to find out that they got, drawn out of the district when we redid the maps. So I think they are going to expedite it. So I really hope while this has been pending that the AG's office has been contacting, a ton of experts and figuring out how to blow up the other side's case. Because if they are, then when they get back on that football field, they got a pretty good chance of winning that contest. But if not, and they're just picking things up here, that's going to be difficult to do.
Well, I'm looking at right now, there's an article that came out on Alabama Daily News just yesterday. And I did not realize that to the extent that this, I had a feeling this case could wind up having national ramifications. I mean, it's based on an Alabama underlying actual case, but it has potential for precedent that sweeps across the nation and requires congressional lines to be drawn with race being one of the primary considerations. Not just race, but percentage of population race. And so we're looking right now, they're saying that there's actually lawsuits in Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, all of which could be impacted by this. And we may wind up seeing congressional lines being redrawn all over the place.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, you know, the ACLU is the firm that brought this case, and you know, they are kind of evil geniuses. I mean, they're unfortunately they're very good at what they do. It's that they just, you know, they fight for terrible causes. But because they're such a nationally recognized organization, they got chapters in every state. And even if it's not them that's handling the case, there are other, you know, liberal legal organizations that want to replicate what happened. And to your point, Phil, you're right. I mean, the Republicans only have like a 4-vote majority in the House, and then George Santos is, you know, maybe getting thrown out. So if they wind up redrawing the lines in just a few places across the nation, then, you know, the House could flip and the Democrats could have both houses of Congress and the White House again. So this could be big.
This could. You know, what's interesting, though, and I talked about this on the phone, on the air the other day, is, and I'll probably talk about it more with Jeff Poor later on in this show, is the political side of this is Democrats are crowing right now. But this also could wind up with district lines that mean that our only Democrat, Terry Sewell, loses her election because they water down what she considers to be her base in order to build out the two districts that the current status quo requires.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've been seeing, you know, some of the same articles talking about that. You know, it was really interesting, Phil, because this is not the first time that there has been a proposed second majority black district in Alabama. I think around the 2000s, they were pushing for it as well. And believe it or not, like the black caucus was very opposed to it because they thought, okay, if you wind up, you know, splitting it up, like if you just do it strictly by the math, yes, maybe we can get 2 majority black districts by a hair. But if we do that, all we need is just a handful of black voters to vote Republican, and then the Democrats lose both districts.
Yeah.
So they were very opposed to that. So, you know, something similar could happen here. And then, yeah, Terry Sewell could wind up losing her seat over this.
Yeah, there's a great presupposition by Democrats that if you're black, you will vote Democrat. And that's, to me, that's such an insult. It takes away the idea that black citizens may actually have a determination in their own mind as to what they want to do.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, Clarence Thomas, who's one of my heroes, you know, he when he was going through the Supreme Court, you know, nomination, you know, when they brought out Anita Hill, he came back up and he just called it for what it was. He says, "You guys are doing this because we all know what's going on here. We've got the wrong black guy. He doesn't toe the party line. He doesn't think like us. So it's a high-tech lynching of uppity blacks who dare to think for themselves." And I mean, those were bold words, but he was spot on. And the Democratic Party hates them. They do think that if you're black, you're going to vote Democrat. And while, you know, a strong majority of them, you know, do, I hate how they treat black people who think differently than them, because to them, like, they are the enemy, they are turncoats, they are traitors, and they have to be canceled, because otherwise it breaks down this presupposition that if you're black, you're going to vote Democrat.
Well, you know, we saw that during the 2020 election, when Biden literally said to Charlemagne the God, who's a radio podcaster guy up in New York, he looked at him and said, "If you don't vote for me, you ain't black." And I thought, good Lord, if a Republican had said that, we'd have been jerked off the platform and made to, you know, go to some kind of labor camp to fix yourself. Hey, I'll end with this. Justice Clarence Thomas, your hero, one of my heroes also, in his dissent in this decision that we're talking about, he said that the drawing of these lines using that criteria, he said in his words, quote, "lays bare the gulf between our colorblind constitution and the consciously segregated districting system being constructed by the court in the name of the Voting Rights Act." Great, great lines from a great man.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember reading that. I shouted amen so loud that they probably heard it in Washington all the way from Alabama. Spot on.
All right, Matt Clark, if they want to find out more about where you are with the Center for Law and Liberty, how do they find you?
Feel free to check us out at alabamalawandliberty.org. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and feel free to call us at 256-510-1828.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Phil. You too.
All right, take care. All right. He's always got great insight into, and I love the fact that this case we're talking about, that Matt actually submitted a brief in this case. All right, listen, Y'all stay tuned. We'll take a break right now. We'll come right back and begin putting a wrap on this one, and then we're going to take the conversation a slightly different way at 3:30 with Jeff Poor from 1819 News. We'll talk with him about who does he think is going to run against our only Democrat, Terry Sewell. He's got some ideas. He wrote a piece about it today. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. So, Butters, we live right now. Now, you live across the river, right? So, am I right in saying that?
No, I'm in Rainbow City.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Even still. Okay, so you're in this section. You're in this section of the county. So, for those that don't know, we're broadcasting right now from Etowah County. And so, here's the thing, man. You and I both currently live in the 4th Congressional District, right? The highest per capita vote for Trump of any congressional district in the entire United States. And what a lot of people don't realize is Etowah County happens to be the most populated county in the entire 4th Congressional. I mean, the Adderholtz District goes from the Mississippi line pretty much to the Georgia line.
Mm-hmm.
But where we live, you and I live, literally within a few miles of each other, is on the cusp of almost like three congressional districts. So we're barely in, geographically, barely in the fourth. We're five. I mean, you could almost throw a rock to the third. And then which one is Palmer? Is he the fifth? I've forgotten what number his is. But anyway, but then Congressman Palmer is just like a half a county over in the other direction. So if they redraw the lines, every map I've seen shows Etowah County moving out of the 4th Congressional District for the first time in decades. And like all of a sudden, it's a whole new, who's our congressman?
Yeah, I was forced into getting familiar with all this through the process of the rendering plant when we were fighting all that.
Oh, yeah. You. Oh, yeah. That was a hoot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So very, very, yeah, pretty crazy.
Well, it's going to be pretty crazy. But here's the other piece of this. So like, you know, you heard Matt Clark saying a moment ago, the case is not actually done. All they ruled on was the preliminary injunction and the status of the current case. And like Matt said, in essence, it's like the we're at halftime, and sure, the ACLU is up at half, but there's a lot of game left to play. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know the true merits of the case, how well we're going to be able to argue at this point. But I don't think our arguments have changed. It just means that we have to redraw the lines. And then what happens if? Oh, I don't know. They come back and say, no, you don't. I mean, this could go on for a while.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's got to be a number of folks that are sitting around going, well, I might run, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Or you might have a congressman who's currently going, am I still going to live in my district?
Because nobody's beaten Adderholt, you know, it would seem. And, you know, but if that all gets redrawn, that opens up an interesting door.
It does. And I think the ones who have to watch right now, in the process are the freshmen. So, you know, down yonder in Mobile, and then the Wiregrass, and then up in Huntsville, you've got three fairly young, by, you know, political terms, fairly young congressmen. And it could easily be that the seniors go, you know, we leaned in and got our districts fixed. Good luck to you. And all of a sudden, they draw a primary opponent. They're like, wait just a freaking minute.
Yikes.
But there's even some concern that down in the Wiregrass, they might draw part of that into what is currently, Jerry Carl's district from Mobile, Barry Moore from the Wiregrass. What's going to happen? I don't know. They could get drawn together. There was talk about that before. So I don't know what's going to happen, bro. But the bottom line is we're going to see some machinations going on. If you think there ain't some smoky backroom deals happening, it's already begun, I guarantee you.
I don't. It just makes me mad to think about it.
I went through redistricting two or three times, and I'm just saying it is maddening to watch.
It sounds like it's counter to the whole reason we got here in the first place.
Yeah, like, don't you dare consider race. How dare you consider race? Did you consider race enough? You need to consider race more. I mean, somebody please tell me the rules, just so we know where we stand. But, you know, go figure. And, you know, once again, Alabama at the center of it all. And not, you know, by the way, I'll just go ahead and say, anybody who's looking at us going, well, it's Alabama because they're racist. We were doing everything we could to have a race-neutral congressional line. And they came back and go, no, we're gonna have to ask you to be a little more racist, please. We're so confused right now. All right, coming back in a minute, we'll be talking with Jeff Poor from 1819 News, getting his perspective on who might rise up now and run for this office, given the opportunity to compete with Terry Sewell or rise up for a new Democrat-drawn district. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be this one. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about this show sends its signals way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, hey, listen, we're going to continue this conversation regarding election machinations. We've walked down the line of what's up with election integrity laws nationwide. We drilled down a little bit into the fact that the Republicans just chose not to pass a ballot harvesting bill that was poised for final passage in the last legislative session. Then we delved into the why, maybe because the RNC just came out and said, you know what, we're going to go do ballot harvesting. So maybe they were holding off on purpose. And then we jumped into the SCOTUS decision with Matt Clark, broke that down in more detail, and what our attorney general thinks he can still do on the issue. And now we're going to go one step further. So bringing on right now my friend Jeff Poor, who is host of the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in the coastal regions. But he's also, by the way, recently been rebranded as the editor-in-chief of 1819 News. So without further ado, hey, Jeff Poor, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, listen, before we jump into the piece you wrote today about who might run against Terry Sewell and all that, you guys just broke a story. I mentioned it earlier, but anything new on this ALDOT director, John Cooper, our cabinet-level official being arrested for harassment?
So what I'm hearing, and a couple of sources tell me this, is a property dispute and may have had a lapse of temper there. And, I mean, he's known for this, and that's what it led to his arrest.
All right, so there was no physical altercation that we're aware of, just the fact that he was basically getting into it with a neighbor or something?
Well, we don't know that, but we do know that that's what it was over some easement, and he just lost his cool is what I've been told.
Well, so you heard anything from the governor's office about it yet?
No, we reached out. I did call Gina Mayola. She has not responded. Neither, I guess we called Tony Harris and Al Donald by surprise with the news, but I mean, it's there for the world to see at the Marshall County Sheriff's site. But we did all that for you, 1819news.com. But I just, like I say, if it sort of fits his his persona. I mean, he is known to have a temper and
yeah.
get a little hot under the collar sometimes.
Yeah, that is true. All right, man. Well, listen, we'll stay tuned for more on that story. In the meantime, you wrote another piece that came out this morning talking about, you know, speculation. What other Democrats are out there that might have the hubris to believe that they should rise up and run against Terry Sewell, or for that matter, if a district is drawn differently, where it might be that would bring another Democrat into the fold? So give us your rundown. Who are you thinking could be on the congressional scene?
So, Saul, what you think about this? Because everybody's really focused on, well, Republicans could have two seats, and you know they're going to dilute the Democrat vote in AL7, and it's going to turn a sure Democrat district into a maybe Democrat lean or toss up district. But you got to go back to 2010 and look at Terry Sewell. How did Terry Sewell get here? I mean, it's been a while. Arthur Davis runs for governor and gets clobbered by Ron Sparks in the Democrat primary runoff that year. But not a lot of people are paying attention in AL7. Sheila Smoot, who was a Jefferson County commissioner at the time, and Terry Sewell were in their own contest for that Democratic nomination. And Sewell did pretty well. She won by 10 points. But you got to remember at the time, Senator, big Tea Party. I mean, you remember Tea Party wave, and there wasn't that much attention being paid to Democratic Party politics, especially in a red state like Alabama. She only won that seat, that nomination, which eventually led to the seat, by 6,000 votes. And you look even closer at the totals, she did win Jefferson County, but where she really flexed was in the Black Belt. Selma, that'd be Dallas County, Marengo County, Perry County. I mean, she just dominated there over Smoot. Now, Smoot did well in Sumter County and some other places, but where Terry Sewell is really strong is a Black Belt. Well, you look at what they might do in this reapportionment. If they have to go back, they're going to have to split up AL7. There's no way around that
yeah.
and make two districts. So if they split up the Black Belt for Birmingham, Terry Sewell is in Birmingham. She lives in Ross Bridge, I believe. She is going to have to run as a Birmingham candidate. Well, there's a lot of Birmingham candidates that are probably a lot stronger than she is and on their home turf. I think she is vulnerable in a primary matchup against another Democrat in Birmingham.
Well, she's still crowing, though. I mean, she went out on CNN and others the other day talking about what a wonderful thing this is going to be for the state of Alabama, how excited she was to be a part of it. But I agree. I mean, I think that in order to meet the standards being set by this most recent decision, I think there's no way around it except to have to carve up what is currently her district. And then that opens a door for, okay, if we just built what the court calls two black districts, which I still find it amazing that we're having to put race as the primary factor, then you look at, okay, then what does that do to her perceived base? And suddenly you've got other people. So give us some names. Who are you thinking that could be out there on the horizon?
The two I think would be shoo-ins. I think Senator Marika Coleman would do well. She kind of runs right now in a swing.
She's west
as it is.
West Jefferson County, is that right?
West Jefferson County, Pleasant Grove, Hueytown, yeah. Places like that. I mean, they're not ruby red, but they're not like downtown Southside or Birmingham or anything like that. The other name that I think would just be a shoo-in to defeat Terry Sewell would be Randall Woodfin. Now, would he give up mayor of Birmingham to be in Congress? I mean, it could happen, but the fact that there are names that we're talking about, I think, shows some vulnerability. I threw in some other names in my piece. I think Linda Coleman Madison. Some people may disagree with some of these, but we're just who might make it competitive and force Terry Sewell to have to get out and campaign and spend money, because up until now she'd either run unopposed or she would just it would be token opposition that didn't have a shot at her.
Yeah, I mean, I know Linda Coleman Madison. I think the world of her, she's a Democrat. Truly, we didn't agree on much of anything in politics, but I just don't see her having the appetite for this. But then Randall Woodfin, I think I do. I think I could see him believing that that's his next step to the national stage. Man, a lot. Now, let me ask you this. If you saw the lines being drawn a little further south, in towards the Selma, Montgomery area. Do you see, like, Stephen Reed, who is the mayor of Montgomery, whose dad, Joe Reed, has been the driving force in Democrat politics for many, many decades? Do you see him being a force?
I see somebody out of the Reed world being a force. I suppose it could be Stephen Reed. And we've seen this before. Remember Bobby Bright ran for Congress at AL2 as a Montgomery mayor. So, I mean, it's not unprecedented, uncharted territory. But, yeah, whoever draws that is going to be, I think, a product of what I like to call the Reed machine. And, I mean, it's been in play for years and years. AEA, Paul Hubbard, and somebody will come out of that, I think, for that, if the way that is drawn to include Montgomery.
All right, so your piece contemplated the Democrats that could rise up. But the reality is the state party is going to be looking, the Republican Party is going to be looking for Republicans to rise up and challenge those seats. So within those same areas, who do you think, or do you have a thought yet as to the names that might arise on the Republican side of the ballot? I mean, are we going to see, is Martha Roby ever going to come back? Is somebody like Paul DeMarco going to throw his name in the hat? What are you thinking there?
I could see Paul DeMarco. I don't, Congresswoman Roby, probably not. I don't see that. I mean, she could still be Congresswoman if she really wanted to. But watch for that. You got to think. I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, conservative, especially if you look at the legislature, who might run. Here's a name I'm going to throw at you. What would John Merrill consider it as a Republican from one of those two districts? He's a Tuscaloosa guy, right?
Right.
Thinking like that, and who's in those circles and who's in those areas that could raise a little money and entertain such a notion. But the other problem is Gary Palmer is going to be out there and he's going to be somewhere. If they do slice and dice this, does it take over Hoover? It really depends on where they draw these lines. Might he be in danger of having to run against a Terry Sewell as an incumbent?
Wouldn't that be a hoot? I mean, you'd like to think that some of the guys that have seniority are able to fend off the redistricting fights, you know, through like a lobbying effort. But I don't know, man. If they're forced into a state position, and here's the other thing you got to watch is if things get ugly, the court removes it and requires outside parties to draw it for the legislature to vote on. It's anybody's ball game right now, is what it feels like.
Well, and the maps I've seen, I mean, I've seen them dice it up. A Palmer's district, and then the other one that just gotten a lot of press would be taking one of the minority-majority districts, going all the way down into Mobile and cutting into Carl's district, but creating a South Alabama from state line district from Mississippi to Georgia along the southern border of Florida from Dauphin Island to Dothan, as my colleague Sean Sullivan says. I mean, that's one other one which would pit Jerry Carl against Barry Moore, which – yeah. Could be an ugly primary.
That would be a way ugly primary. I can see Club for Growth getting all in on that one. Well, I tell you what, man. You know what? It's going to be interesting to watch, and might as well get the popcorn ready because what we're looking at right now is anybody who is currently in the House from the state of Alabama is going to be running in some new territory potentially by the next time around.
Yeah, I think Adderholt's safe. I think they'll keep strong together, and they keep Mike Rogers. Everybody else is in flux.
Yep, I agree, man. I totally agree. Well, all right. We'll keep tabs on it and have you back on to opine as time goes along, right?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Senator.
All right, we'll see you, Jeff. That's Jeff Poor, editor-in-chief, 1819 News, and the host of his own show, The Jeff Poor Show, down on FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile. Jeff's a good guy, by the way. In case you didn't know, he used to actually work for Tucker Carlson, and then he went on to work with Breitbart News, and now he's doing what he does here in Alabama. So anyway, all right, Butters, take us to the break, my man. We'll do the break right now. We'll come right back. It's time. It is time to switch. We're going to number two on the Triple Dipper, Adventures in Woke World. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.